I'm Gina Barton. I'm the criminal justice investigative reporter here at the Journal Sentinel. So for the past several years, really, and more intensely for the past several months, I've been investigating the cold case homicide of John Zara, who was 14 years old when he was murdered in 1976.
John Zara has lunch with some friends in the Franklin High School cafeteria. Then, without telling anyone his intentions, he disappears.
That's from a WTMJ TV series about the case that aired in 1978.
The boy will be missing for 8 days. Police, family, neighbors search and find nothing. A reward is offered. The search widens and becomes increasingly frantic, but nothing is found. Then the unlikely. Two boys taking a shortcut through Whitnall Park find John Zara, nude, face down in the rocks and mud. Police will say he's been molested and then bludgeoned, perhaps with a large rock.
Almost 4 decades later, John's murder still hasn't been solved. His family keeps hoping that maybe advances in technology, someone with a guilty conscience, someday that they'll get an explanation for what happened. And with this series, we're hoping to shed some light on the investigation. There's a police detective that I had worked with on a previous story, and a long time ago, probably back in 2009, he said, "Let me know when you want to write your next crime narrative." He gave me the files on the John Zara case, all 6,000 pages of them. And so I spent a lot of time reading them back in 2009, 2010, and then kind of time got away from me. I was doing other things. And finally, now that the 40th anniversary of John's disappearance and murder is coming up, I decided this would be a good time to go back at it. Also back in 2009 was the first time that I talked to Mark Zara, who was John Zara's older brother. It still really deeply affects him and his family. And, you know, he has such a hard time dealing with the fact that the case was never solved and he will never know really maybe what happened to his brother.
I think he was a typical kid that grew up on the south side of Milwaukee. He liked biking. He wasn't really too much into sports. He was really into what we used to call swamping, which was going to like swamps or, you know, where cattails were and stuff like that, and trying to catch crayfish. I think we called them pollywogs or frogs. Things like that.
John's mom, her name's Janice, she's still alive, but she didn't want to be interviewed for this story. It's really hard for her to talk about the situation. So this audio is the only audio we have of her, and it's taken from that TMJ TV series. This aired in 1978.
He loved hunting. He loved fishing. He loved model building. I still have many of the models that he built. When we moved out here, which was less than a year after this happened, this is an isolated place. There was really nowhere for him to go. It was mainly confined to here unless I would drive him back to the far south side of Milwaukee, which is where most of his friends were at that point.
Back in February of 76, Mark was a sophomore in high school, and he was on the wrestling team. When he got home from practice that night, John wasn't home yet. And his parents had kind of been hoping that John was with Mark. But when they realized he wasn't, that's when they knew something was wrong.
Well, my mom called the police department, and she had the impression they gave her the brush off. You know, oh, he's doing something. But she knew right away that wasn't the case.
Their mom started calling John's friends in Milwaukee, in Franklin, all around. Mark said his mom wasn't the type to panic. Instead, she became really determined in times of crisis.
But my dad and I, and I'll remember this till the day I die, getting in the car and my dad driving real slow down the road and me running from one side of the ditch to the other because my dad thought maybe he'd got hit by a car on the way home. And we went all the way to the high school, and I think we came all the way back. And that took 2 or 3 hours. And, you know, back then nobody had a cell phone and things like that, so there was really no way to keep in touch with my mom or anybody else. And we got back and, you know, he still wasn't home. And my parents were really worried.
Mark remembers waking up early the next day and going to Franklin High School with his dad.
And my brother's locker was right inside the front door, the main entrance, like maybe 10 lockers over. And I had his locker combination because his locker was, mine was way at the other end of the school. And I used to throw my stuff in his a lot of times. And I opened a lot. And I remember my dad was there and the principal, this Romuald Kaczynski, was there. And my dad says the police, that somebody from the police department was there, but I don't remember that. Then I opened his locker up and his jacket was there, you know, and it, I mean, so right away they knew something was wrong. And then it just spiraled out of control from there, where, you know, it became this missing persons investigation. And like within, over that weekend, you know, it got on the news and
they put up flyers and stuff.
Yeah, and that whole week, you know, when I look back at it now, a lot of what happened was, it seems to me kind of ridiculous, you know. Again, because the protocols have changed so much since it's happened, and maybe that's one of the things that came out of this was that, you know, they changed the way that they investigate a lot of these missing person cases over the years.
Right.
Maybe not just this case, but I'm sure a lot of other ones too. You know, what to do and what not to do. And, you know, and maybe the police knew from the get-go what they were doing, but I got the impression. And I didn't know, I was only 14 or 15 at the time, that they were making it up as they went along.
Hales Corners police officer Gary Lindenlob was one of the first cops to get to the park after John's body was found. He's retired now.
There was a snowfall, I believe, between the time he disappeared and the time he was found. A lot of the evidence would have just been destroyed, basically, by the fact that there was snow there and it melted and everything. So that made it a little hard.
The snow wasn't the only complication. John's body was found in a portion of Whitnall Park that's located in Hales Corners, which means they have jurisdiction. But the missing persons case was found in Franklin, where the Zara family lived. Eventually, the Wisconsin Department of Justice, the District Attorney's Office, and the FBI all got involved in the investigation. I think the thing that struck me the most when I started working on this case was, number one, just how complicated it must have been to try to solve a crime like this back in the 1970s. They didn't have computers where they could scan in all their files. They didn't have email. They didn't have texting. They didn't have cell phones. They didn't have faxes even back then. So they had five different agencies trying to keep track of all this information, and it was not easy to do. So there was a lot of confusion and a lot of people doing the same thing that other people already did, and you know, it seemed really difficult to have a unified approach to the whole thing. This case was unlike a lot of investigations I've done before, in that the police gave me the entire case file, which I think in my 20 plus years as a reporter, that has never happened before. So I wanted to read everything. And then after that, I kind of try to get it straight in my head. And then I want to start talking to people. And so the first two people that I wanted to talk some more to Mark, first of all, to make sure that he was okay with me writing about this, and then talking to the detectives who worked on it. Almost 40 years after he responded to the call about John's body, retired officer Gary Lindenlob still remembers the impact this crime had on the entire community.
People were worried, and you know, rightfully so. I mean, this is so unusual. You know, everybody was concerned. Hales Corners is, you know, it's a bedroom community, but, you know, we have Highway 100, we have US 45 going through there. If you're there at 8 o'clock in the morning, you see how much traffic comes through Hales Corners. We get traffic from Illinois. It's just like every day there's a lot of traffic there. So, you know, was it somebody that's just driving through the area?
For the Zara family, the loss of John changed everything.
When I saw my brother in between classes, I want to say sometime around 9 o'clock in the morning, just in the hallway. I was going out of a class, and he was walking in. I don't even know if we waved to each other. I just remember seeing him and him walking in the door, and that's like my last memory of ever seeing him. And I'm sure I was the last one in my family to ever see him alive. When I look back at it now, I mean, it could never be normal again, and it wasn't.
You know, as a reporter, I always try to be compassionate, and I always want to do stories that are going to in some way be helpful to people who have survived a crime like this. It's just really interesting to come at it from where I am now, because I've got a 12-year-old daughter. And so I think that gives you perspective, too, about, boy, what would it be like to lose her 2 years from now? I couldn't even imagine. Next time on Unsolved.
You'll learn how a criminal investigation can be fumbled.
I never had an idea that, you know, the police were like Starsky and Hutch. I never had that idea. I was never that naive. But I can't believe the follow-ups.
An alibi that wasn't double-checked until 2 years after it was first used. A sexual encounter between the chief investigator and an informant that may have damaged a chance to bring a suspect to trial.
Basically, this investigation was baffling from the beginning. Unsolved is produced by Katie O'Connell and narrated by me, Gina Barton, reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The project was edited by Greg Borowski, with web design by Aaron Coy, graphics by Lou Saldivar, and video by Bill Schultz. You can find more online at jsonline.com/unsolved.